When life happens and you need care fast, you can Teladoc that. Need help navigating big changes? You can Teladoc that too. From checkups to check-ins and everything in between, for your physical health or for your mental health, you can Teladoc all that. We've got doctors, therapists, specialists, and coaches all available by web or app. Get started today at TeladocHealth.com. That's TeladocHealth.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Green 19 Podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. The Packers escape Arizona with a 27-23 victory against the Arizona Cardinals, and we can just kind of break it all down. And Ryan, I'll let you start it off. At the end of the day, we kind of talked about it on Thursday. Style points don't really matter right now. And it was an eventful weekend for the Packers. They find a way to get a win. Just what were your takeaways?
Don, what did we talk about in the backseat of the car as Spoon was driving us to the stadium today? Do you remember? I said, it's October. Just take the win and get out of the desert. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the most important thing. Now, it doesn't mean there's not a handful of things that this team really needs to get better. And that is locker after Spoon. I think you were there when Xavier McKinney was saying this, too. That he's sick of this going down to the fourth quarter. They need to play better. And that's all true. Because as Xavier McKinney said, they do this against a good team, it'll bite them. Okay, that's absolutely accurate. At the same time, this is a parity league. This is a close game league. The good teams win close games. The bad teams, like the Arizona Cardinals, lose five straight by 13 total points.
Yeah.
That is what decides teams. The Packers are 4-1-1. You don't apologize about that to anyone. You take the win. You keep trying to improve. You go on to next week.
Yeah. Spoon, just for you, you know, what do you make of this weekend and just the performance today?
Well, I'm always of the, you know, thought that a win is a win. You know, you take a win 10 times out of 10. But I think we're starting to see some systematic issues on defense that, well, actually on both sides of the ball, that are troubling. And now we're six games into the season, and you're starting, getting ready to face some of the better teams in the NFL. And you've got broken coverages. I mean, busted coverages. You can't, you know, you're jumping off sides. You're committing special teams penalties when they hurt the most. Your offense doesn't look that great. It's kind of really hit and miss. There's just no momentum building right now with the Packers, and there's a lot of things they got to look at.
Yeah. For you, Ryan, just because I know you, both of you guys were kind of chasing the plane fiasco over this weekend, starting on Saturday. Just, you know, I don't know if you even talked to some of the guys in the locker room, and Spoon, I'll let you do it as well, since you talked, you know, wrote a story about it. You know, what did they kind of say about how it was going through that and trying to get prepared for this game as you have to adjust your schedule?
Yeah, it was the first thing that Matt LaFleur mentioned that is at the podium when he came in, is from the moment they got on this trip, it just seemed like nothing went right. And, I mean, look, I get it, because, look, we travel a lot. I hate airports. I absolutely hate airports. The Packers, they don't ever have to go through what we go through. They get on the chartered flight. It works. Takes them to their destination. It's a very nice way to do business. We have flight delays all the time. They always suck. So I get it. Like, a five-hour flight delay, that's not fun. I understand that. And sure, you get into Arizona really late. I don't know, Spoon, did they have their walkthrough? I'm guessing they had their walkthrough before getting on the plane in Green Bay on Saturday.
So it's really funny. So the offense did. So the whoever's in charge of Austin Strobel put out a bunch of cones and said, you guys can walk in this area, you know, and so players did. And then they decided to have a offensive walkthrough. But everybody but Jeff Hafley on the defensive staff was on the first plane, and so they were gone. And so the defense didn't really have a walkthrough. So, you know, I mean, they were either on the plane playing cards, They were walking around the tarmac, but they couldn't go back into the airport because they had already passed through TSA. And they're like every schlep like us who gets stuck on the tarmac, you know?
That, and it's not fun. It's not enjoyable. It's not a good experience.
No. And it was interesting. I asked Javon Bullard about it. And he was like, you know, nobody made the excuse that they played crappy because of it. Not one guy said that. Okay. But he was saying that, you know, usually you get to the place, you have all this routine. He's like, guys go get IVs, they do their ozone treatments, they do, you know, all these things. And mostly he said they got there and they went to bed. You know, and some guys had to go to meetings, but he was like, you know, mostly we just went to bed. And he's like, I just didn't feel right because I had this routine that I do. So maybe it threw them off from that standpoint. But I think once the game starts, that it might throw off your pregame kind of mental getting ready. But it shouldn't. Once the game starts, it shouldn't affect you. But it is a weird deal. Yeah.
Did anyone say if they were tired at all? Because they got in super late. They got in at 8:30. Pacific time, which is 10:30 their time. That is much, much later than you want a team to get in.
Yeah, that was what Josh Jacobs told me. Yeah. I don't know if anybody told you, but that's what he said. Because number one, he's dealing with a strained calf. Mm-hmm. And so he said during that 5 hours, he's trying to stretch. He had a recovery band like wrapped around it. He was doing everything possible to try to keep that thing loose. And then he said, I get here and my body feels like it's like midnight. And he said it definitely threw him off a little bit. So he said he could kind of feel a little tired from just that whole ordeal.
And just to accentuate my point, like, look, two things can be true at once. I am not blind to, as Spoon, you said, the systematic issues that are happening. I'm not blind to the fact that it's week 7. And by week 17, they need to get better. And if they don't get better by week 17, week 18... This team, as currently playing, is not going to make that run. I'm not blind to that. I also think there was quite a bit of adversity this weekend. The flight thing is adversity. For the first time, what we learned today, not only that they can take it on the road, because they hadn't done that. They lost to Cleveland. They tied in Dallas as their first road win. But they can actually play catch-up. They haven't had to do that all year. Their first 5 games, every single one of those games, they get out to a double-digit lead before allowing a single point. They don't have their first lead today until inside the 2-minute warning of the fourth quarter. Good teams figure out, and we talked about this all season, good teams figure out ways to win. With this Packers team specifically, a lot of times, I remember our conversation after Cleveland, we talk about they need to figure out ways to win on days they don't have it. Well, for whatever reason, they didn't have their A game today. Mm-hmm. They still figure out a way to win with a lot of things, a lot of adversity going against them. You take that, I think, as a successful week. You keep going, and they do need to get better.
Yeah. I think we can stick with the offense for a little bit, and then I do want to talk about defense.
The one thing about that is they haven't had their A game for 3 straight weeks now.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, that's the issue. If it were one game, that would be one thing. But they played the same way the last 3 weeks. I don't – you know, maybe other than Dallas, the offense has been pretty stuck in the mud. You know, they showed a little bit of life last week against Cincinnati, but I don't think the offense is playing well at all, and the defense has just been, I don't know what's wrong with them. If they don't have Micah Parsons, they lose this game.
Yeah.
And if Jonathan Gannon doesn't go for it on 4th and 1, they probably, maybe lose the game. That was handed to them, the fact. I mean, they had to make the stop, no question about it, but he should have just punted. The way the Packers offense was playing, I would have punted and pinned them down right here.
Yeah,
you know, to your point, they haven't had their A game for 3 straight games now. They haven't lost any of them either. There's something to be said about
three mediocre to lousy teams. You know what their combined record is? 8-12-1.
The Cowboys stomped the Commanders today in Dallas in Jerry's world. You know, the Bengals on Thursday beat the Steelers, beat Aaron Rodgers. That's this league. Like this, especially, there's no dominant team right now. This league is full of parity. You have to figure out a way to win. So I agree. They haven't had their A game the last 3 weeks. They need to find that. That needs to happen. But they also haven't lost the last 3 weeks. And at this time of the season especially, you need to keep stockpiling wins. Being 4-1-1 is a pretty good place to be.
Yeah, it's not bad, but it's not going anywhere if they don't find a way to start playing better.
It'll be interesting to see, you know, how things look as they take that, if they will take that next step more than anything. Mm-hmm. And when I did watch this offense in this game, it was really fascinating to watch the way the Cardinals defended throughout it. They brought their safeties up, and they dared the Packers to try to go deep. But there just wasn't a lot of that. There were times I would just say, man, just get Matthew Golden in one of those routes and go. I think about the fourth down play with Dobbs. They overthrew it a little bit. I was watching. I was like, hey, if Matthew Golden was there with that speed, you know, maybe it would have worked. But they were able to get Josh Jacobs going, even though it was limited snaps because of the calf. He was really the answer late in the two-minute drive and beyond. As far as just the offense, you know, you talked about it being out of sync. What do you kind of see, like, work that has worked throughout this game, or where they were able to once again score 27 points, which is funny, all their wins have been scoring 27 points.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like to focus on what they couldn't do, which is, you know, if the team starts throwing all kinds of different looks at you, which Arizona did. I mean, it seemed like they had a really good game plan. They were they're moving those safeties all over the place. They were pressing. They were not pressing. They're playing off. You know, when you face a team that's doing all that stuff, you got to be able to just run the ball. You know, line up and win at the line of scrimmage. And I don't know. Sometimes I think LaFleur gets caught up in the, okay, you know, this is what they're giving us, this is what we're going to take, instead of, we're going to just take this. You know, we have one of the best running backs in the league. We have an offensive line that should be able to create some yardage. Let's do that and establish our offense that way. And instead, I tend to think that they just want to take what the defense gives them. And the defense is giving them that for a reason.
Yeah.
Because they think, okay, we'd rather give that up than whatever we're taking away. So I don't know. I think there's some philosophical things that, you know, they really got to get back to running the ball.
Yeah. Well, I think the calf injury was a major pain today. And I think that the Arizona Cardinals are no dummies. And they knew that Josh Jacobs was on a pitch count and that he was limited. You can tell by the fact that they were basically playing even Emmanuel Wilson and Josh Jacobs that they weren't going to have their star running back to the capacity that they usually do.
Yeah.
Dom, you were in on Josh Jacobs in the locker room. Apparently, he said he went up to the coaching staff and he said, hey, I know my body put me in at the end of the game.
Yeah, it was definitely. He said it got a little testy on the sideline because he said going into the game, they told him he would get around 20 to 25 plays. And he said, man, I feel good. Like, he's like, I've been in the situation before. It was ironic because McManus talked about how he played through a quad injury in the past. He brought up a situation when he was with the Raiders. He had a strained calf on Friday. They were playing Seattle on Sunday. He had the best game of his career with 304 yards. So he said, I've been through this before. He said, I will tell you if I'm hurting, like if I can't go, he said, but just give me a chance. So they told him he would have around 20 to 25 plays. He said, but late in the game, he said, there was no question that he was going to be there, especially during that two-minute drive and beyond.
Yeah, what do you have at halftime? Six carries?
Yeah, it was only about six carries, maybe.
Yeah.
Five or six.
And he
finished with 13 in one reception.
Yeah, and he looked really strong at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets them into the end zone, basically, on those two couple of runs. So, yeah, they have other backs. They can still move the ball. They should still be able to move the ball on the ground. That's what they're predicated on. At least, you know, LaFleur claims that. So I don't know. They have to figure that out too.
I get why the Packers wanted to be cautious with,
of course,
Josh Jacobs' calf injury. You just look around the landscape of sports, not just the NFL. Guy's got a calf strain right now. Boy. That's a scary injury to have. I mean, you're just if you overuse someone that's playing through a calf injury, you're asking for potential problems. So this was not going to be a week where the Packers would just unleash Josh Jacobs and, hey, you go do what you usually do, he still found a way to have a pretty big impact on the game. And I agree. I mean, when he did have the ball, he looked good. But that doesn't mean that you don't need to be very careful with a calf strain either. Right, right. I think they offensively, they need to figure out who – what's the pecking order in targets? Who should they be throwing to? Matthew Golden gets three targets in the first drive. One of them converts a fourth down. He has won the rest of the game. He catches all four of his targets.
Yeah.
Finally, Tucker Kraft had 10 targets. That's a good sign. Josh Jacobs, second most Romeo Doubs, second most targets with 8. And I don't want to in any way dunk on Romeo Doubs. He is a very solid NFL player. He is reliable. He makes the right play. His chemistry with Jordan Love is important. It's clear that Jordan Love trusts him. I don't know how much longer the time will be that Romeo Doubs should have double the targets as Matthew Golden. When you watch Matthew Golden play, there's another gear. There's a lot of talent there that I think offensively they need to really focus on fast-tracking, developing that receiver, because that's going to open up their offense. They had no explosiveness today, right?
Right.
But Matthew Golden only had 4 targets and only one after the first drive. That needs to stop. You need to figure out who are the game changers, who are the real playmakers in this offense, and really accentuate focus on getting them the football as many times as possible.
Anything?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why. So 4th and 2, I think they called a timeout, right, before they threw deep to Doubs.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you put Golden in that spot and say, you know, you're the Z or whatever Romeo Doubs was? Mm-hmm. Now, maybe it's based on coverage. I don't know if Doubs takes his route deep because of coverage. But if you can and your intention is to go deep, then put Golden in that spot. Why wouldn't you? You know, now maybe that causes the safety to play a little deeper because he knows Golden, but it's still 4th down. And they still think you're going to run. And Golden, even if that guy's even with him or back a little, can still run by him.
Yeah.
So I question that.
And in no way am I saying that Romeo Doubs needs to be taken out of this offense. I mean, he made one of the biggest plays today. 7 seconds to go in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets 22 yards, puts him in range for a 61-yard field goal, which was a stunning turn of events. I don't think any of us thought the Packers were going for anything when they, 7 seconds to go, even with the timeout, they tried their offense on the field.
Killed them in Dallas, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stealing 3 points there when you're getting the ball to start the third quarter was huge. Who made that play? Romeo Doubs. He has a role in this offense. I just question whether being one of the top targeted guys week in and week out is that role.
Yeah. I have one more point on the offense, and if I'm way out of left field, you guys can definitely interrupt me. As far as the offensive line, this was something I was thinking while watching this game. A couple of games, rather. Rashid Walker, he struggled at left tackle. Jordan Morgan was having success at left tackle. But also at the guard perspective, when I was watching, I didn't feel like Sean Ryan was struggling. I think he's probably a better run blocker compared to pass blocker?
Oh, yeah.
But I guess when I was watching him, I didn't see anything like, oh, he shouldn't be guard. So my question is, and I'll let you start, Spoon, and Ryan, you can add as well. Do you think it might be worth, at least in your opinion, revisiting the left tackle competition between Morgan and Walker? Or should it kind of stay as is with Morgan at guard?
I do, but I think their thought process is Rashid Walker's significantly better run blocker than Jordan Morgan is.
Okay.
I tend to think you put your left tackle, he's got a pass block. That's what you want. You want him to keep him off your quarterback's blind side. You know, Walker does give up a lot of pressures, but, you know, he's also very physical on the run. On Josh Jacobs' first touchdown run.
Yeah, yeah.
He sealed off that side. He and
Banks
mm-hmm. sealed off that side. I don't know if Jordan Morgan can do that. So that's the question. If I were them, I would put Ryan back in at right guard and then rotate those two guys and just let them sort of what you were doing with Ryan, you know? And maybe that lights a fuse, you know, it lights a fire under Rashid Walker or whatever, but he needs to play better.
Yeah.
The only thing I question, and I agree with pretty much everything you said, the only thing I question is timing. I mean, at some point, I feel like they need to just pick a position for Jordan Morgan and let him play it instead of just him all over the place.
Right, right.
And it seems like now for 2 weeks, they have decided that that position is going to be right guard.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's the best idea to then uproot him and left tackle and just keep doing the musical chairs thing that has not worked for him. Some guys can do that. Elton Jenkins early in his career could do that. Zach Tom could do that. Okay. And just because you can't do that doesn't mean that you're a crappy offensive lineman. Like, most guys can't do that. And Jordan Morgan has not been a guy that can do that. So I get your point, but if that was going to happen, I think it probably should have happened 2 weeks ago, because now it seems like they have an offensive line that is set and they're going to go with it. I'd be hard pressed to keep it that way.
I get what you're saying. I guess the one reason why I was thinking of it and why it was difficult to do it sooner because of all the injuries with Banks, and then obviously you throw in Tom as well, even Anthony Belton. So I feel like this is really the first time you actually have seen a full, pretty much healthy offensive line. And I mean, even Spoon mentioned like the run blocking that Rashid Walker did was really good, but then that exact same game he gets bull rushed by an edge guy and he falls into Jordan Love's lap for a sack. So that's why I was just bringing up the question, like, is it worth doing it? But it makes sense, though.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. I really do. Jordan Morgan is a better pass blocker.
Right.
I agree with Spoon.
But Rashid,
you want your best pass blocker on the offensive line to be at left tackle. Like, that is protecting your franchise's backside. That's not the case on this offensive line. I just – at some point, the musical chairs has to stop.
Yeah. I got another question, and this is defensive related. It's kind of maybe similar. Nate Hobbs at outside, at corner, is it maybe worth again revisiting going with Keyshawn Nixon and Carrington Valentine with Nate Hobbs and Bullard kind of rotating in the slot?
Yeah, so I kind of addressed that in my story for tomorrow. Lots of people, scouts, people from the Raiders, they didn't think Nate Hobbs could play outside, that he was a nickel corner, slot corner, physical, a lot like Bullard. And I think he's proving that he can't.
Right.
He just can't do it. He's not fast enough. He's physical. He bumps guys at the line of scrimmage, but even Marvin Harrison kind of pushed him around a little bit today. But here's the dilemma. So Bullard is playing really well. Bullard is blitzing. He's can cover guys in the slot. He can cover really good players in the slot. He was covering Jamar Chase last week in the slot. I don't know that you want to take him out of that position. The only thing I could think of is you could take Evan Williams out, who struggled today, had a really bad game, and by his own admission, had some brain farts, and put Bullard in at safety in some instances and put Hobbs in. But, you know, maybe you have to sort of do it based on matchups. I just don't like the idea of taking Bullard off the field.
I don't like the idea of taking Bullard out of the slot right now with the way he's playing. Like, I get your point, but I'm not sure that Javon Bullard can play safety even better than Evan Williams can, especially over the long term. I get that Evan Williams did not have a good game today, but I've seen Javon Bullard at safety. I've seen Evan Williams at safety. I think the totality of their work a year and a half in, Evan Williams has probably been a slightly better safety. And Javon Bullard's really good in the slot. To your point on the 35-yarder that he gave up against Marvin Harrison Jr., it wasn't just that he got bullied. When it came time to recover, there was just no recovery speed at all. He could not close that gap, which you see NFL corners, if they get bullied down the sideline, the ball's in the air, a lot of times they do have some speed to close that gap and recover. It wasn't there. You need that on the outside. So I think that's a quandary as well. I'm not sure what the right answer is there, but I don't know that it's taking Javon Bullard out of the slot. It just seems like that's been such a natural fit for him.
It is tricky, though, because, and you even mentioned Evan, and we talked about it on your blog, he could probably have at least three interceptions throughout this season. And I don't know what it is. Is he just not quick enough to get to those spots?
Just doesn't have the, you know, 4-5 speed to get there. And he helps in a lot of other areas, you know. He's around the line of scrimmage, he tackles pretty well. But he should have at least 3 picks this year, and 2 of them possibly today.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, he tried to cover Harrison one-on-one in the slot. That was a bad matchup. He actually was there, but, you know, he committed pass interference. I don't know. He was sold as a guy who can make a ton of big plays, mm-hmm. and he hasn't.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know what they do there. He's a really smart player,
yeah.
but he made some mistakes today. So I don't know. I don't know what they do with that.
And he's going to keep getting picked on because team in the league wants to throw out 29. No team in the league wants to throw out Xavier McKinney. So
yeah,
you want to keep throwing a 33.
That's why you got to have McKinney in the middle, because Williams just from the deep middle, he can do it from – well, actually, he was in cover 2 and he should have had that interception on the sideline. Mm-hmm. They threw between – I don't know, it was Cooper and somebody else, but I thought he had that picked off.
Yeah.
Am I wrong? Did you remember?
I thought he was late. Yeah. I thought he was late there, and it shouldn't have been. I remember looking up, you know, and who was late there? Because there's like a streak that came across the field. It was late. It was like, oh, it's Evan Williams.
Yeah. Well, I think about it was the Dallas game, that Pickens catch. Like, mm-hmm. if he just kept running, he would have been able to pick that ball off or at least knock it down. Yeah, so he just wasn't able to get there in time. So we're going to the back end. We can keep moving in a little bit and talk linebackers because Edgerrin Cooper, it's funny because I've talked a lot about, not only me, but we've all talked about just like his blitzing and what's that like. And obviously you see that. You see him great in run defense, but it's really fascinating, especially because, you know, Halfley likes to see him, like you say, working in the pass game. And
despite his bull crap response to my question about it.
It's right.
Anyway, go ahead.
He don't want to give you anything,
not that
right?
You're salty. No.
he can't give you everything, right? But I do think about there's a lot of moments with him. I mean, it's a young player. I think about in one game, he has a pass breakup. That was really, really impressive against one of the really good tight ends in this league. And then at the same time, there looked like there was some miscommunication on a few of those same plays. Just, you know, what do you see from Cooper and how they are using him?
Well, I don't think either of those touchdowns was on him. Definitely the one, the McBride in the corner, I think was on Keyshawn Nixon. I think they were in thirds, and that's his – the Cardinals ran a really nice route right in front of him to make him think, you know, okay, do I take this guy or do I watch the corner? And Cooper's job is to make sure McBride doesn't catch it underneath and then run in. On the other one, Evan Williams said there was a miscommunication. They should have made a check, or they did make a check, and Cooper didn't get it. Otherwise, he would follow McBride across the field a little more, but more than anything, they needed a guy to drop. The Cardinals ran verticals into the end zone, clearing everybody out. Well, one of those persons should have stayed low. I mean, he said a call should have been made, so that person stayed low. So I thought Cooper played a great game. Oh, yeah. I thought when he was in man coverage with McBride, McBride couldn't get open. Mm-hmm. He killed him in zone coverages when he sat down and in those two plays. Otherwise, yeah, I think Cooper is really good. And you saw Quay Walker had a hell of a game rushing the passer. You get why he's blitzing him a lot.
He did. So do you have anything on the linebackers, or do you just want to jump straight to Michael Parsons?
The Arizona Cardinals missed a memo. That you don't block Micah Parsons alone one-on-one over and over again for 4 quarters. I get the Arizona Cardinals have a pair of first-round left and right tackles in Paris Johnson Jr. and Jonah Williams, a pair of top half of the first-round tackles. Doesn't matter.
I was shocked.
You don't do it.
I was shocked.
He was shocked. Yeah. Micah Parsons said, this is the first hat trick of his career, which is also shocking. Xavier McKinney said, he's like, Micah Parsons told him after the game, that's the first time I had three sacks. He's like, what?
Yeah.
I thought you already did that already. Got the T-shirt and everything. No, first time. Micah Parsons, it's his 16th multi-sack game of his career. Three times before today, he had 2.5 sacks. He's never had three sacks. And after the game, after reaching this milestone for the first time, Micah Parsons said, I don't think it's the best pass rushing game of my career. I think they just gave me opportunities that they give other guys in the league. Because nobody blocks Micah Parsons that way. And if you do, this is what happens. He will have three sacks on you. So I don't know what that coaching staff was thinking. They missed the memo. If you do that to Micah Parsons, he will wreck a game.
I was surprised, especially after the first sack. There wasn't like they did a couple chips, yeah. But other than that, they were still taking it one on one.
I asked Micah Parsons after the game, like, at what point did you realize that they were doing something funky? Like they were just going to block you one on one. He's like, after the first sack, they didn't change.
Yeah,
like you know, you think of you think of the opener this year, right, against the Lions. The Lions start out blocking Micah Parsons alone with Penei Sewell, and then he beats them because that's what he does. And they changed. They started chipping and sliding and doing those things. After that first sack, where he bullies Paris Johnson on third and goal and forces a field goal, Micah Parsons is thinking, okay, now that's going to go like every other week. And it doesn't. At no point do they say, oh, wow, he's really good. You should. He had 10 pressures today. He had 5 quarterback hits. He was a drop hip tackle away from having 4 sacks for the first. Like, he wrecked this game. And the Arizona Cardinals just watched it. Like, I get Matt LaFleur, who I think had a pretty solid game today. I mean, he made the right choice at the end to go for the win. Mm-hmm. He made a brilliant decision before halftime to try to get into field goal range. Two huge, huge decisions that worked out well. I get that Matt LaFleur takes flack. Every head coach in the league takes flack. But how can you, as a coaching staff, sit back and just watch Micah Parsons do that and never change it up? Just be like, yeah, we'll just keep blocking one-on-one. I don't understand that.
Very, very interesting. Spoon, anything on that, just or even just the pass rush as a whole and how guys were kind of disrupting up
front? Yeah, I think you see that when the Packers get teams in passing downs, their pass rush is pretty good. You know, when they can just focus on it. Like, I thought that whole drive, their guys were – causing problems, you know, all the up and down the line. Mm-hmm. The ironic part, and I can't remember if it was the 3rd and 11 or the final 4th and 11, is the Cardinals left Trey McBride in to help. I'm like, of all the people you're going to leave in to block, why would you leave Trey McBride in to block? Yeah. So
that ain't it.
I don't know. It was. I don't know. It was baffling to me that you would try to block a guy with one. Or try to block Micah Parsons with one guy.
Yeah.
You can't.
No, not at all. Now, as we can wrap things up and talk, hit on special teams very quickly. I mean, you kind of mentioned really the main thing from special teams was the 61-yard kick from Lucas Haversick. But even through the first, I guess, maybe three and a half quarters, I thought the special teams as a whole were played pretty well. But again, in those fourth quarter, it's like that's when the penalties get there. Like that's like if you're gonna have penalties, do it in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Do it in the first half. Don't do it late in the game when the Cardinals are trying to drive. So that's really just my big takeaways. And
I think that's why Versace had Harrisick kick the ball into the end zone on Arizona's last drive.
Yeah.
Give him the ball at the 35, but he's probably like, well, it's better than them taking out 30 plus another 15-yard penalty something like that.
So. Which happened after a touchdown. Like, right after a touchdown ties the game, boom. They're already in field goal range the way that field goals go now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I think it was the Mosby, Aaron Mosby face mask, maybe, that was there.
Exactly. It's mind-boggling because they did play really good special teams up till then.
Yeah.
People on the blog were asking me about Haversick. So what do they do with Haversick now, you know? Is it a possible replacement for McManus? I'm like, well, McManus has, how many years has he been in the league?
11. Yeah, 11. 10, yeah, 10 or 11.
11 years. He has 11-year track record. Haversick has an 11-game track record. He looks really good.
He does.
He's got a super strong leg.
61.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
Yeah.
Everything he kicks is sky high. Mm-hmm. But what are you going to do? I mean, Brandon McManus was near perfect last year. He was near perfect in training camp. I don't think you can do anything. The only thing you could do is keep him on the roster as long as you can and maybe try to trade him.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, that is really comical. I guess that's what recency bias. Because like you said, I mean, McManus just kicked in a Super Bowl. Like, at the end of the day, he is a veteran guy. He missed, what, maybe one, two kicks all of last season. Mm-hmm. He saved the kicking unit as a whole when they couldn't figure out.
Right. He had two game-winning
kicks.
Isn't
it funny? Like they go through a year and a half of trying to find a kicker, and they just happen to wander up on Lucas Haversick. I don't think the answer is releasing him. Like, you need to keep him. Even if it's funky to have two kickers, like, you keep him as long as you can, as Spoon said. None of the issues on the kicking, the field goal kicking this year, the extra point, they haven't been Brandon McManus' fault. It's been protection in front of him. So, like, the kicking situation has not been perfect this year, but it hasn't been on the kicker.
No.
And he hit a 53-yard clutch field goal in Dallas, too.
Yes, he did.
That took a lot of guts.
And even the one at the end of overtime to tie the game, if you miss that, it's a loss.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to win. You don't want to tie. But a tie is a lot better than a loss. There was still pressure on that kick.
That is fascinating. But, yeah, I think, I guess just as a precautionary, it doesn't hurt to keep Haversick around, especially if this continues to linger for McManus. I mean, you're kind of holding him off right now. Hopefully things work out in the long haul, but you never know what will happen.
Yeah, and the only way you can get a trade is if two teams are interested.
Yeah.
And one team doesn't think you can get him on waivers. So they trade for him.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's two teams that need kickers right now.
The benefit for now of keeping Haversick on the roster, if you don't need the roster spot, they don't need the roster spot.
Not right now.
The benefit is, and I don't expect this to happen based on everything I've seen from Brandon McManus since he got to town 1 year ago, right? It was week 7 of last year, 1 year ago. I don't expect this to happen, but if for whatever reason, kicking is a fickle business, if it goes south, you have another guy that you feel you pretty good about. That's the benefit there. If you don't need the roster spot, keep him.
Yeah, might as well. So, guys, we're going to leave Arizona. The Packers come away with a win. And up next, I don't know if you know, but Packers are heading to Pittsburgh. Aaron Rodgers plays quarterback.
Who?
For the Steelers, right? So we will talk more about that in the coming days.
Oh, yeah, we will.
We can leave Arizona and just leave it talking about this game. But
I bet you he doesn't leave Micah Parsons blocked with one guy. I can guarantee you that.
Micah Parsons was talking about it in the locker room before he even left and got on the plane. He was Aaron Rodgers is coming up.
The jersey swap story was fascinating, too.
It was.
We can dive into that, you know, maybe on a Thursday when we'll do the other podcast to preview the Packers and Steelers.
Can I ask a question?
Do it.
This might be a better question for midweek, but we're going to be talking about Aaron Rodgers midweek, so it's just in my head right now. Let's preface it by saying that injuries are part of the business. It's part of the game, period. No matter who you don't have, it's your job to figure it out. And hey, the Packers did today, right? It didn't look great. They figured it out. They won. But there are some pretty key guys that are out on both sides of the ball. I'm curious, if I asked you who among Christian Watson, Jaden Reed, throw the kicker in there, Brandon McManus, or Devontae Wyatt, is the biggest, most important player they need back, who would you say?
I would say Devontae Wyatt, because the offense hasn't been great, but I mean, they've still scored 27 points, scored 40 points against team. I know maybe not the greatest defenses in the world, but I think especially as long as Josh Jacobs is healthy, because the run game and just what they like to do offensively runs through him, as long as he's feeling good, you can kind of manage it offensively. But there were a lot of moments even in this game where I was thinking, like, if you had Devontae Wyatt in there to kind of help, I think he could change the game. Granted, I thought Kobe Wooden played a good game, and I thought Carl Brooks had some good moments as well. But for me, I would probably say Devontae Wyatt. What
about I would say the same.
Wyatt. See, I would too. And I think I'm glad you guys said that, because in my mind, watching today, and I'm saying this on a day that the Packers clearly lacked an explosive pop on offense. I'm saying this on a day that Micah Parsons had 3 sacks and the Packers had 6 sacks. Like, I'm saying it on this day. But watching this game, I'm still thinking, boy, Devontae Wyatt not being in there is a huge deal.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's significant how big of a vacancy, a void he's left in the middle of this defense by having this, being out with this knee injury. I think they need him back very badly.
Yeah, especially because you saw what he was doing before he got hurt. With Christian Watson, quite frankly, we don't know.
True.
What it's going to look like when he comes back.
I mean, Jaden Reed, we would.
He was really good.
Is Love's favorite receiver by far. Yeah. And they definitely miss him, you know, in clutch situations. So it's close.
It is.
But if you're going to make your defense, you know, if you're going to make one side of the ball really good, then you would take Devontae Wyatt back as soon as possible. And then you at least have a whole defensive unit.
Yeah.
I agree with you, even while thinking that the story ultimately for the offense this season is going to be when Christian Watson and Jaden Reed come back, what does it look like and how good can they be? What is their ultimate ceiling going to be then? Because you can't just take two of those guys off the field over the long haul and expect it not to have an impact on the offense. It does. It has. It will. I think that's the question offensively. How much is that other gear? Because there is another gear. We don't know how much it is. Even still, I think Devontae Wyatt is the signature guy that's not there, that as soon as that knee heals, boy, they need him back.
Yeah, that's no question about it, and couldn't agree more. So, guys, any final words, final thoughts before we wrap up this show and get ready to head back to Green Bay, Wisconsin?
No 5-hour delays. I just want to get out of here.
I know it. So that's mic drop from Spoon. And other than that, big picture, Arizona was cool, and we survived a hike, Ryan. And Spoon, you didn't have any delays on your flight. You got in late.
How are the quads feeling?
They're hurting.
My quads are barking with the Camelback Mountain. Your first time.
It was my first time on Camelback Mountain. I was joking. I was like, I needed to be talking to McManus, what's his therapy routine for his quads? Because mine are on fire right now. But, hey, survived it.
Yeah, we did.
Advanced. And now we'll head back to Green Bay, and then we'll get on a plane again and head to Pittsburgh. But, guys, thank you as always for your insights and so much more. And we thank you all for checking out the Green 19 podcast. For Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominique Yates.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.